Hello there and welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday, July the 5th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up,
my country tis early, sweet.
Americans celebrate the nation's birthday with fireworks, music, and patriotism. A rise in terror attacks worldwide, with three in the last 24 hours in Saudi Arabia. Another major British politician resigns following the Brexit referendum. A NASA spacecraft pays a visit to the largest planet in the solar system. Also ahead, reviews of the best new movies to hit theaters.
The legendary Smokey Robinson is coming to do some of his hits. We've always wanted Smokey. We've been doing the show for 36 years, and we got him. We're so excited. Alison Porter, who just won The Voice, is coming. She's going to sing the national anthem, as well as she's going to do something special. It's the 100th anniversary of our national parks. And Alison is going to be doing an amazing version of America the Beautiful that'll be intercut with some of the most beautiful footage you've ever seen of the parks throughout the United States. We're very excited that Christopher Jackson, who plays George Washington on the mega hit Hamilton on Broadway, is coming. We're so excited. So if you will, George Washington's coming back to Washington, D.C., right?
Very nice.
We're real excited about that. It's an Olympic year, as we all know, and Scott Hamilton is going to come and do a special tribute, a kickoff, really, if you will, to the Rio Games. And we have a couple of dozen members of Team USA are going to come and join us. And Cassidy Pope, who won the Voice a few years back and who's been a number one selling country artist, is doing her big hit, Invincible. And for the first time ever on Capitol 4th, General Colin Powell, a great American leader that we all know, is going to do a tribute to the 75th anniversary of the USO. And General Powell ran a USO center when he was stationed in Germany. And he's got a lot of great things to say about all of the good works that the USO does. And then Kenny Loggins is coming to get us all up doing Footloose. Amber Riley from Glee and The Wiz Live. Oh, she can blow the roof off the place. She's so much fun. And look out, we have the whole cast of Broadway's On Your Feet, the Gloria and Emilio Estefan story, are coming. And it's the biggest and best Fourth. The fireworks here are, there's nothing like them. They're so amazing, with the icons of the Washington Monument, the Lincoln, the Jefferson, the White House, and especially the West Lawn of the Capitol. We're live. We're going around the world on the American Forces Network for all of our troops.
And how many people are you expecting to attend this year?
There'll be hundreds of thousands, over 10 million viewing live on PBS. It's really, really something. No place like Washington, D.C. for our nation's birthday party.
And that was Michael Cobert. He is the executive director of A Capitol 4th, the huge annual production of live entertainment and fireworks displays in Washington, D.C. Millions of Americans are celebrating the country's 240th anniversary of our independence. Security has been enhanced in Washington, D.C., New York City, and Chicago. Thousands have been reveling in the 4th of July celebrations. Well, presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump is blaming the news media for the controversy surrounding an anti-Hillary Clinton tweet that appeared to depict the Star of David atop a pile of cash. In his first response since his official account tweeted, then deleted the image on Saturday, it later posted a new version with a circle in place of the star. Hillary Clinton's campaign says the tweet is disturbing and part of a pattern that should give voters major cause for concern. Meanwhile, President Obama will campaign with Hillary Clinton at their first joint appearance later today in Charlotte, North Carolina. And in the UK, where the Brexit referendum has turned British politics upside down, Nigel Farage, the man largely responsible for Brexit, announced he's resigning as the party's leader. At a press conference in London, he said he wants his life back.
My aim in being in politics was to get Britain out of the European Union. That is what we voted for in that referendum 2 weeks ago. And that is why I now feel that I've done my bit, that I couldn't possibly achieve more than we managed to get in that referendum.
Brexit has been really blowing up social media since the vote took place. And here to talk more about that, G. Abby Lee. Hi, G. Well, the political landscape in Britain really seems to be in transition.
Hi, Laurie. You're absolutely right. The UK political scene has been changing so much since the EU referendum. The big news on Monday was the resignation of Nigel Farage as the leader of the UK Independence Party. He posted on Facebook and Twitter that he has decided to stand aside as a leader of his party. You can read the full statement on Facebook, but let's just read a couple of sentences here. He wrote, "I've decided to stand aside as a leader of UKIP. The victory of the Leave side of the referendum means that my political ambition has been achieved."
Wow, and how is the online community responding?
A lot of the most liked comments were calling Farage a true British patriot and the most apt candidate as the next prime minister. It was quite difficult to find any negative comments to that specific post, but keep in mind, it was also on his Facebook page.
So let's talk about Twitter. What's happening on the Twitterverse?
Farage tweeted about his resignation and shared a link to his full statement on the UKIP website. He also changed the description of his Twitter page, calling himself as a UKIP member of the European Parliament as opposed to its leader.
And what's the media reaction been like?
Quite varied. Sky News, which is a 24-hour news organization based in the UK, tweeted a clip from his resignation announcement, and it captioned the clip as Nigel Farage said, "In the future, I won't be constrained when I answer questions. The real me will now come out." To that tweet, many people asked whether he was ever constrained in his speech. As you know, Laurie, he is widely known for speaking up his mind. And before I go, I want to say that this Monday was the Independence Day on this side of the pond. And to commemorate, President Obama sent out this tweet. "Happy 4th of July, everybody. And to our brave men and women in uniform, on this day and every day, we thank you." That's all for me today. Lori?
All right. Thanks so much, G. You can follow her at G. Abby Lee. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Here are some of the headlines at voanews.com. African film gives spotlight in Dallas, Texas. Trump and Clinton close to picking VP running mates. Newly disclosed U.S. document shows possible Saudi links to 9/11 attacks. Bangladesh mourns. Investigators question hostages rescued from the attack. And Californians seek a pot of gold in marijuana legislation. For expanded coverage of these stories and much more, go to voanews.com or check out the VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. International Edition continues. A suicide bombing outside of one of Islam's holiest sites killed four Saudi Arabian security forces Monday, and similar attacks outside a Shiite mosque and a U.S. consulate in two other Saudi cities are raising fears of a coordinated assault aimed at destabilizing the Western ally. Thick plumes of black smoke were seen rising from the site of the latest explosion as thousands of worshippers crowded the streets around the mosque grounds where the Prophet Muhammad is buried. Political science professor Amin Saikal with the Australian National University.
The Islamic State itself is dominated by Sunni extremists, and the Prophet Muhammad is, of course, the leader of the not only Sunni Islam, but Islam as a whole. And any heinous acts against the site can only damage the Islamic State more than it has already been, particularly in the eyes of the Muslims across the world.
No group has taken credit for the Saudi attacks, but the Islamic State is claiming responsibility for a suicide truck bombing that killed as many as 215 people in Baghdad, Iraq on Sunday. VOA's Michael Lippin spoke with Jonathan Shainzer with the D.C.-based Foundation for Defense of Democracies about why the Islamic State group and its supporters have been escalating attacks globally in spite of losing territory in the Middle East.
It is an indication right now that despite the fact that ISIS is currently losing ground to the Iraqi army and to the counter-ISIL coalition, we still have the problem of ISIS, the terrorist organization, that even though the organization may now be losing ground and its government may even be collapsing, the very ideology of ISIS will continue, and we should expect there to be a phase two of this conflict, even if the caliphate falls.
How is it that the Islamic State's ideology can keep fueling terrorism when the group is losing territory?
The ideology has been one that has been around for quite some time. You know, obviously we saw it on 9/11. It's existed before that in other forms. You know, there's a debate in Washington and around the world right now about exactly what to call it, whether it's militant Islam or radical Islam or jihadism. The fact remains is that this is an ideology with staying power. And ISIS is only the most recent incarnation of this ideology, and so we should expect it to continue to live on regardless of what happens to the caliphate.
Well, the attack in Baghdad seems to be part of a series of attacks either claimed by or inspired by the Islamic State around the world in recent weeks. How much of those attacks do you see as being a coincidence, or how deliberate do you think they might be?
Well, my sense is that we are currently witnessing a campaign to mark the month of Ramadan. This is something that we saw during the Iraq conflict after U.S. forces took the country. And I think that we're going to continue to see attacks probably for the next day or two. I think there's a lot of heightened fear here in the United States after the CIA director announced that the United States could potentially be a target. So we'll wait until the end of Ramadan, which is on Wednesday, and hope that we see no more attacks around the world and certainly not here in the United States.
What do you think the United States and its partners can do to try to prevent more of these attacks, you know, inspired by this ideology that you say just doesn't go away?
Well, certainly I think one element of this is about defeating the caliphate itself. The more ISIS looks like a losing bet, perhaps this could be a way to roll back those who might embrace the ideology. That will not work by itself. There needs to be a broader strategy that tries to weaken this ideology worldwide. This would certainly entail working with our Sunni partners in the Gulf and around the Arab world to work in the mosques and to work at an education level, a grassroots level, to try to diminish the appeal of this ideology. I think there is one other element that can't be overlooked, and that is that that a lot of the ISIS supporters, certainly in Syria and Iraq, are fighting against a stronger Iran. They're fearful that the United States has empowered Iran and therefore believe that they are engaged in a sectarian battle, a holy war against the Iranian-backed coalition that would include Hezbollah. It would include the Assad regime and also IRGC and Iranian forces on the ground. As long as this sectarian conflict rages, it will be very, very difficult to roll back the forces of this Sunni jihadist trend. And so this will also be part of the equation for the United States.
Well, on a day when America is commemorating its independence with July 4th fireworks, the U.S. Space Agency is anticipating a celestial event that could prove very illuminating about the planet Jupiter and the beginnings of our solar system. NASA's solar-powered Juno spacecraft hurling through space for 5 years and nearly 2 billion miles is now making its closest encounter with the biggest planet in our solar system. I talked about what this mission could reveal with Greg Redfern, NASA Jet Propulsion Lab Solar System Administrator.
This is called Juno to the planet Jupiter. And Jupiter is the largest planet in the solar system. It's known as the king of the planets. So Juno is going to be arriving at Jupiter on the nation's birthday to begin a wonderful 20 months of exploration of the king of the planets up close and personal.
And what will it be doing? Will it be taking pictures? I assume it's not going to be able to land on there.
Well, you're right. It's not going to land. It's going to orbit. And it's going to have a special orbit, Lori, that takes us over the north and south pole of Jupiter for the first time in our exploration of the planet. And it will get to within 3,100 miles at its closest approach during this orbit to give us an unprecedented view with the Juno Cam, a camera designed to return pictures, as well as the scientific instruments. This whole mission is designed to finally answer some questions about what is Jupiter made of, what's in the cloud tops, is there water, what's the gravity field of this giant planet like? What's the magnetic field? And we're really going to rewrite the textbooks on Jupiter.
What do we stand to gain from understanding more about this planet?
In learning more about Jupiter, we're going to learn more about our solar system. Why do we have four rocky planets that we call the terrestrial planets? That's Mercury, Venus, Earth, and Mars. And why do we have four giant gas giant planets, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune? We're going to learn about how our solar system forms, how do planets form, and we're going to find out how the biggest planet in the whole solar system is comprised, what it's made of, how it came about, and that helps in our knowledge of how we, planet Earth, came into existence and evolved.
If all goes as planned, what can we expect and when?
The spacecraft on autopilot on July 4th is supposed to begin pre-Jupiter orbit insertion operations. And what that essentially means is the spacecraft is going to prepare itself to align to fire its main engine for 35 minutes starting at about 11:16 p.m., Eastern Daylight Time, July 4th. And what our listeners have to realize, Jupiter is 534 million miles away, which means it takes radio signals traveling at the speed of light, and that's 186,000 miles a second. And
wow,
as fast as that is, it still takes us 48 minutes one way from Jupiter to our radio antennas to collect those signals. And if all goes well, it will enter into an orbit around Jupiter, being captured by the giant gravity well of Jupiter.
That's Greg Redfern of NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab's Solar System Ambassador. NASA is tracking Juno's Jupiter rendezvous with the countdown and live video streaming at nasa.gov. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, the host for Jazz America, where each week we give you the best of jazz past and present and conversation with the music makers. You can hear the program online at voanews.com and on the air on VOA each Saturday and Sunday at 13 hours Universal Time. Join me for Jazz America and help me celebrate the greatness of a century of jazz. Listen at 13 hours Universal Time, Saturdays and Sundays, on voanews.com and the Voice of America.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on the Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
This is VOA's International Edition. Well, behind every great solo artist are often the unsung group of talented musicians, and that was true for Elvis Presley. He remains one of the biggest music success stories, even 40 years after his death. Behind Elvis was guitar player Scotty Moore, who has now passed away. International Edition's Jim Stevenson remembers Moore's contribution to music with VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald.
Hey, Jim. I mean, Elvis would have been Elvis no matter who he played with. But we lost one of the architects of what we think of as rock and roll this week. I mean, even if you're a young music fan and you've never heard the music of Elvis Presley, this guy's work still resonates in music that you would hear today. His name was Scotty Moore. He died on June 28th at his home in Nashville. He was 84 years old. As Elvis Presley's lead guitarist in the 50s and 60s, he really helped create the sound we know today as rock and roll. He was an artist with the guitar. His guitar work sometimes worked with Elvis, sometimes against him. And it all goes back to July 1954. That was when Scotty Moore met Elvis at Sam Phillips' Sun Records studio in Memphis. Now, he and Elvis and bassist Bill Black were in the studio trying to put something together, and nothing was working. And so finally, at the very end, they came up with an adaptation of a Big Boy Crudup single called That's All Right. Mm. It made rock history. It was Elvis's first single, and it's sort of like the Big Bang of rock and roll. Subsequent singles included Mystery Train, Heartbreak Hotel, Jailhouse Rock, Blue Suede Shoes, all of these great singles that have passed into rock and roll lore. And they influenced so many artists who came afterward. And people like Jeff Beck, Keith Richards, Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin, they all said listening to Scotty Moore helped them decide to become rock guitarists themselves. The good years were from 1954 to 58 when Elvis was drafted into the Army. At that time, Scotty Moore had only earned a few thousand dollars from his work with Elvis, who, of course, became a multimillionaire. Mm-hmm. Now, he stuck around Sun Studios, producing other artists and working as a studio manager until 1964, when Sam showed him the door. He made some records with other artists. He produced some other artists. He reunited with Elvis in 1968 at Elvis's famous televised comeback concert. Scotty Moore was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in the year 2000, and Rolling Stone ranked him as the 29th best guitar player of all time. So it's been a crazy news week, but this was a quiet but profound loss for music.
Absolutely. Elvis was such a larger-than-life figure, but not far behind him. Was the music.
And if you listen to that, I was just listening to those songs the other day, and they still hold up today.
Mm-hmm.
It's the artistry behind it, the energy and the creativity. And you could tell it must have been incredibly galvanizing for people, you know, 60 years ago. Scotty was the mastermind behind it.
And the master behind our Top 20 Countdown is none other than Ray McDonald. And you can find him on Twitter, too.
You can find me on Twitter at Ray on the Hits if you want to explore the music of Scotty Moore a little further. And, of course, I have a lot of other stuff waiting there for you, too.
We look forward to it. Thank you so much, Ray.
You got it, Jim.
Well, as the United States celebrates its 240th birthday, some people would rather go to the movies. Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard joins me now for some reviews of the best bets in theaters right now.
We have some big movies. 4th of July is a big platform for some large films. One that I have been looking forward to, because I've been a fan my whole life, is The Legend of Tarzan. And the first thing people say to me is, do we really need a $140 million remake of Tarzan in 2016? I'm like, why not?
What's the, well, was it, is it worth it? You saw it, right?
I did. So going into Tarzan, I thought, okay, here we go. We're going to see the origin of Tarzan all over again, like we've seen 1,000 times. It doesn't do that. It starts already with Tarzan being a nobleman in England, married to Jane. And so I thought, wow, okay, good. The first hour of this movie, we don't have to rehash and tell me an interesting story. So he travels back to the Congo on behalf of the King of Belgium, who wants these diamonds to finance his army and his empire. And he's tagging along with him is Samuel Jackson playing George Washington Williams, who's a real man who actually went with the Lord of Greystoke back to the Congo. So we have action-adventure. We have, you know, him swinging through the vines, and we have some really great performances. I enjoyed it immensely. I mean, I was really surprised how exciting it was. And Alan Skarsgård playing Tarzan was brilliant. Samuel Jackson gave great comic relief. But the problem is, do people want to see Tarzan, a big-budget Tarzan, in this day and age, especially during the summer? So I'm not sure what the audience is going to be, but I think the older crowd will really enjoy it.
I think it looks really good. I definitely am planning on seeing it.
It's a great escape.
Yeah.
It really is. It's an old-fashioned, big-budget epic, which I really enjoyed because, you know, it's all – I love the Victorian era. So it's so rich in detail. And also director David Yates, who directed 3 or 4 of the Harry Potter films, really knows how to handle a big-budget epic. And that's what I really enjoyed about the location. It's really good to see an old-fashioned, majestic epic.
Awesome. And what about The Purge election year? How is that?
Well, if you're looking for a thriller, this is the third one in the series. And if you're not familiar with The Purge, the premise is simple. Murder and mayhem, and there's no law. One night a year where people go out and get revenge on their boss. They can do all the rights they feel, you know, by murder is legal. So it's really a crazy concept, but it's a very successful film series. And this is the third one called Election Year, where the powers that be want to keep the purge. They're all for it. And there's also these candidates that are running against it saying, look, the purge is barbaric. We need to end it. So it turns into a battle of politicians and a battle of parties trying to kill one another so they can keep their agenda. So I think it's straight from the formula. I love the first two purges, especially the original one. It's really a unique kind of a sci-fi futuristic concept. But this one, they kind of strayed from the formula and just made it really political, which I think really deterred from the movie. But it only cost $10 million to make, so it's going to make a fortune. I think it already was targeted to make $40 million its opening weekend. So The Purge is alive and well.
And that was Jeffrey K. Howard at VegasFilmCritic.com. You can find all his video reviews there. You've been listening to International Edition. We're glad you could join us. Find us anytime at VOAnews.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Thanks so much for joining us. And thanks to director Tracy Carter, engineer Charles Hall. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great, great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
Self-government, that is, a people exercising all the necessary functions of power without interference by a higher authority that they can't control themselves, is a core American value. It's also at the heart of the Declaration of Independence, which we celebrate today. Thomas Jefferson, the document's primary author, wrote that self-rule is the separate and equal station that a people are entitled to under the laws of God and nature. It didn't come easily. America's early history is marked by conflict with other countries threatened by Republican government and among Americans themselves over the ultimate form that that government would take. But the Declaration laid the framework for a nation that would endure and grow, inspiring similar independence movements around the world. When war first broke out between Britain and its North American colonists, few imagined, let alone supported, the creation of a new nation. Historians note that even as the fighting raged, the colonists were deeply divided over the future. Roughly a third came to believe a complete break with Britain was needed. A third remained loyal to the British crown, and a third simply wanted to be left alone to raise their families and do their jobs. The 56 men who signed the Declaration on July 4, 1776, cast the first votes for independence. their fellow citizens ratified the choice, and with it the then radical principle that government should be based on the consent of the governed. While this is the event and cause we celebrate today, it isn't unique to Americans. It is embodied in the constitutions of many nations and observed in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that we all recognize. In essence, then, Independence Day is a celebration of our common humanity.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
It's for what's the universe?